The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good morning to you. I didn't think it was going to be a good morning, so I'll tell you. So I woke up last night, late last night, with a sore throat and feeling really tired and fatigued and not well. And as I was dousing myself with vitamin C, thinking, oh, what is it going to be like this morning? So as I walked in today and sat here, I felt so much joy in my heart being in community. I'm feeling really happy right now being here. So thank you for giving me this opportunity to be here this morning and feel that there can be joy in the midst of the body feeling terrible and there being a sore throat. I'm just really happy right now. What a nice thing to do on a Sunday morning, to be in community. I invite you to take a moment to appreciate that with me also. It's just so nice. So the topic that I wanted to share some reflections on this morning is the topic of the practice of samadhi, or concentration, as it's often translated as. So just so I have a sense of my audience, who is not familiar with the practice of concentration or samadhi at all? If this is totally new, a show of hands, please. Great, fantastic. Okay, raise your hands. Okay, great. Good, all right. And who has a lot of experience with practice of samadhi? Lots of experience. Great, same number of hands. Okay, who's in the middle, knows a little bit about it, curious to learn more? Fantastic, okay, everybody else. This is great. It's like a bell curve, like everything else. Most of the population is in the middle and then, okay, good. What's that?
Jhana
practice. Oh, yeah, we'll see if you say anything about that today, Okay, so we have people who've done jhana practice and people who are completely new to it. Cool. So in order to get us on the same page, especially for people who are completely new to the term and to the practice, what am I talking about? What is this practice of concentration? So the word in Pali is samadhi, and it's often translated as concentration, which I don't think is a good translation, which I will talk about in a moment and offer the reasons why. But the word samadhi is derived from the Pali prefix sam, which means together, and the root da, which means to put or place. And it's also related to the Pali verb samadhi, dahati, which means to put together, to bring together, to concentrate, to bring things together. So basically, samadhi means unifying the mind in steady, undistracted awareness. And this was from Richard Shankman's book, The Experience of Samadhi, this reference. So a word that is actually much better captures this practice is, I think, unifying the mind, bringing the mind together. Unification, unifying. There are many words, other words that are used: gathering, collectedness, non-distractedness, stabilizing, calming, steady, malleable, stillness, distractions at bay. That can be another description of samadhi practice. And the mind being protected from distractions and difficult states of the mind. It's interesting that the word concentration is often used. And what the problem with concentration, the word is in English as a translation, that it often brings up this image of concentrating, just really working really, really hard on a furrowed brow and really working hard, which is anything but what you have to do in order to practice samadhi. So actually, let's let's play with this for a moment. Close your eyes as you're sitting where you are. And I'm just going to say these words, a few of these words, as translations for you for a moment. And see which one works for you, because that's the one you should be using. Unifying the mind. Unifying. Unification. Let that land and just breathe in and out with the word unification in your body and see how it feels in your body as you breathe in and out with the word unification. Now breathe in and out with the word stable. A few breaths. Stabilizing. Stabilizing the mind. Simply breathing. Calming. Breathe in and out with the word calming. Calming the mind. Calming the mind. Calming the mind, breathing in calm, breathing out calm, calming the mind. How does that feel in the body? Stillness, stilling the mind, stilling the mind, stillness. Now try on the word concentration. Concentration. Concentrating the mind. How does that feel in the body? Concentrate. Concentrate. Now you can open your eyes, please. And I'm curious if anyone noticed any differences between these words. I see a few nodding heads, the differences of these words, especially the word concentration, if you notice how that felt different in your body than any other. A few nice nods, okay. I'd be curious if you'd be willing to share, anyone, just a couple of words. Yeah, that would be great. Actually, I won't repeat. If you would use that microphone. Any show of hands? Yes, I think. Are you looking for the mic? Would you be willing? Somebody is. Oh, there's a mic there. Great.
The other words were fine, but the word concentration kind of like completely zeroed in and give kind of a lightness in understanding what the mind is supposed to do. That's how I felt.
Mm. Gave it lightness and understanding.
Yes, like it's like, oh, that's I can relate to it. That's what my mind is supposed to do. It seemed easier. That's why I felt light. My body felt light when I heard that word.
Interesting. Thank you. Any other observations? One in the back there. And, oh, back there too. The other way. Go ahead.
Is it on?
Yeah.
I definitely felt a lot more pressure in hearing the word concentration. To create more action in my mind, kind of almost forcing myself to do something that my mind didn't want to do. I felt much more at ease with the word calming and still.
Thank you.
I heard you say calm, and I like that because the others had too many syllables. It was like too complicated. And when I heard calm, I was like, oh, okay, that works.
Great.
I found that I couldn't settle on any of the words because it had an expectation built in, which implied effort. So I was trying to think what would be the best I couldn't come up with. But
I've been taught the word composure before, which I really like.
Yeah,
composed, like a composition in a picture, or just like the opposite of losing your composure. And that's always sat comfortably with me.
Yeah, nice. That's a nice word also. Great. Thank you. Great. Thanks so much for sharing. And it's really interesting to see also the differences in what arises for you and how unique it is, the sitting with these words. And whatever word is right for you to have that balance of right effort, which is really important in developing this practice of samadhi, which I'm going to try to use the word samadhi and none of the other ones. And you're free to use samadhi because it's samadhi is a nice word that doesn't have any baggage with it associated, whereas the other ones do for us. But again, if there's another word that really works, the word concentration for some people, it does have that connotation, as it was mentioned, that kind of tightening a little bit, feeling that you have to do, you have to strive. And what one thing that happens with the practice of concentration is, I use concentration, the word, in that way, actually, if the word concentration is used, is when one tries to settle the mind, and bring the mind back over and over and over and over again to the object that one has chosen. What can happen is that the mind can get very tight. The mind can get very, very brittle. So the attitude is very important in setting up the right structure for even practicing this. But I'll get to the attitude in a minute. There are a few other things I want to touch on just to define and clarify before I get more to that. So in Theravada, there are about 40 objects, I believe in the Visuddhimagga and the Path of Purification training manual, for developing samadhi. There are 40 different objects. The one that we most commonly use is anapanasati, breath, the mindfulness of the breath, either here or in the abdomen or the whole body breathing. There's so many different, but usually breath is a very, very common one that is used. And this previous month, Gil started an eight-month series on anapanasati, exploring the breath, which is really nice also as a way to explore the relationship between the breath and how settling the mind samadhi can be practiced. Other objects could be brahmaviharas, metta, loving-kindness, practice of loving-kindness, when you wish yourself or somebody else well. That can be that goodwill, that wish, that wishing well can be an object of samadhi, where you bring your mind back to it over and over and over and over again. There are also what's called kasinas, or colored discs. For example, the white kasina, the color white, when you bring the mind back, keep bringing it back in your mind's eye with the image of the color white. And all of these different objects of concentration, of samadhi, they were taught to different people in Buddha's time. Buddha had an amazing proclivity for knowing what object of samadhi would work for different minds and would give them that. Whereas nowadays, we tend to start with anapanasati as pretty much a universal one, and metta, loving kindness, and the other brahmaviharas are also really nice practices for developing. So what is the difference between vipassana and the practice of samatha? by the way, samatha is the practice, samadhi is the state. So samadhi is the state of concentration, samatha is the practice of concentration. So samatha versus vipassana. So vipassana, which is insight practice, which is what we most commonly do when we come and sit here in this hall and we practice, loosely translated to mindfulness practice, especially in the secular world here, loosely translated as that, is the practice of, traditionally, is contemplating the three characteristics. Traditionally, contemplating the three characteristics of anicca, impermanence, dukkha, unsatisfactoriness, and anatta, not self. More, in terms of a practice, what we do when we practice vipassana or insight practice is we try to first settle the mind. So there is some samatha practice at the beginning. We try to settle the mind, use the breath as an anchor, usually, and then we open up to experience. We open up to sounds, we open up to emotions, we open up to whatever experience arises itself in the moment with acceptance and kindness and curiosity. So whatever arises, we're with that in the moment. We still go, but when the attention gets a little too distracted, when we go on too many trips, when we get on too many trips on our minds and end up in various islands, we bring the mind back to the breath to stabilize, to anchor, usually. But in vipassana, in the practice of insight practice, in mindfulness, we tend to open and investigate the momentary change in phenomena, how things arise and pass away, emotions arise and pass away, thoughts arise and pass away, sounds arise and pass away. So we're noticing, so again in vipassana, in mindfulness, I keep repeating myself, but just I really want to make a clear point, it's contemplating change, and contemplating change in all phenomena that present themselves in any given moment. With the practice of samatha, developing a state of samadhi, we bring our attention back over and over and over again to one object. So we choose one object instead of opening to all objects in our sphere of experience. We keep bringing our attention back to one object. So for example, if the chosen object happens to be anapanasati, mindfulness of the breath, say we've chosen this part, this area right below the nostrils, above the lip, we keep bringing the attention back. The mind wanders, we bring the attention back. We bring the attention back. That's all we do. We stabilize the mind by inviting the mind back over and over and over and over again to the same object. The way this was described years ago by Steve Armstrong, teacher Steve Armstrong, was vipassana insight practice is like serial monogamy, where you're with one object and you're really with that object, with the sound, with the emotion, and you're really investigating it. And then your mind goes to another object, to sensation in your body. And you really investigate that. And then there's a sound, and you go and you stay with that. Whereas the practice of samatha, leading to samadhi, is absolute monogamy. You stay with the object, and you don't move from it at all. Does that make sense? Any questions so far about these two practices? So how do they relate? How does the practice of samadhi, samatha, relate to vipassana? So as the mind gets collected, unified, concentrated, whatever word works for you, gets really stable, the mind gets really stable, the mind that is stable can really clearly see much better. It's not a mind that's distracted. So when you develop samadhi, concentration, stability of the mind, And then you apply that stable mind that you have developed through the practice of samatha. Now you apply it to the practice of vipassana. Wow, you see much more clearly. You can have a lot more insight because that mind is a lot more stable, can really stay with reality. So one simile that comes up for me is looking through binoculars. If you're looking at some distant object far away through binoculars, and your hand is really unsteady, right? Then you can't really see what's going on. It would be too jaggedy, right? But if you stabilize your hand, if you really stabilize the hand, it's like stabilizing your mind. If you really stabilize the mind, then you can really see through those binoculars what's going on. You can see reality just as it is. You can see the state of your mind just as it is, because it's not going everywhere. So that practice of stabilizing the binoculars is like stabilizing your mind, is the practice of samadhi. Looking through the binoculars then to investigate reality, to investigate what is going on, to investigate your mind, then that is the practice of vipassana. So the two of them really relate to each other. They go together. In this tradition, we don't practice concentration, samadhi, whatever you want to call it. Let's say call it samadhi. You don't practice that as an end to itself. In fact, no teacher in this tradition will teach you samadhi as an end to itself. There are other traditions that is an end, but in this tradition, it's not. It's either taught as a precursor, depending on the teacher and the style. It's in the Mahasi approach, which is what we mostly practice here. As you sit on the cushion, you start usually with a few minutes of samadhi. You start with settling your breath. Wherever you choose your breath to be, you settle it. And then when the breath is stable, a little bit of samadhi, then you open it up to experience. Okay, and whenever the attention gets too distracted, then you bring it back. Those are the traditional instructions. You bring it back to stabilize it, and then you open up and investigate. In some other styles of teaching practice, you spend days, weeks, months, or even years developing samadhi, developing concentration, to the point of the states that are called jhana, which are meditative absorptions. Because when the mind keeps coming back and coming back and coming back, at some point it stays on the object and it has the feeling of being one with the object, being absorbed in the object. This feeling of absorption comes up, being one with the object in the mind. And at that point, the mind is so steady that can be applied to any other object at that point. It's that serial monogamy, that you can take that mind that's become really good at monogamy, you can take it and apply it to other objects, and it can really clearly penetrate and see with a lot of clarity. From Samyutta Nikaya 3599 says, "One who cultivates concentration sees things as they are." So it's really that. It's the idea of cultivating concentration. And the Buddha talked about it constantly, talked about the practice of samadhi constantly in the suttas. So in practice, the practice of developing samadhi is indispensable to whatever degree it's available to you, and to whatever degree in your practice you choose to develop it, whether it's as an integral part of your vipassana, of your insight practice, when you stabilize the mind, investigate aspects of realities, aspects of your mind, emotions, sensations, and then come back, or you spend days, weeks, months, years, and then after the mind is really, really concentrated, then switch to vipassana, which, by the way, is the style that my teacher, my Burmese teacher, Pak Sayadaw, that's how he teaches the path. He teaches samadhi as developing the jhanas, and then after those have been developed, only then does he switch and allow the yogi to start vipassana and investigating, which is very different from the style of Mahasi Sayadaw, where the two are integrated. So, and also different from the style of Utejaniya, for example, who's another teacher that some of you might have heard about, who starts with basically an open awareness, and basically opening the awareness to whatever is, and only when the mind is too unstable, then bringing the mind to the body or the breath to stabilize. So there are lots of different ways to practice. They're all good. You have to discover what works for you. And I'm just offering some ideas of what the possibilities are. So how can also concentration or developing samadhi, how does it also help us? How does it serve us in daily life? Just as a practice that we develop. A friend of mine said, which I really like, is that without concentration, we are like puppets on evolutionary strings. Have you noticed how, say, dogs are led by their sense of smell? They smell this and they smell that, and you know, their mind goes here, and their mind goes wherever their sense of smell goes. Their mind is led. We're like that. You know, our minds go here and our minds go there and our minds go everywhere, especially nowadays, because we're training our minds for multitasking throughout the day. We're checking our email a moment later, maybe even we're driving and doing that, God forbid. But you know, we're training our mind for multitasking all the time, not for being stable, not for being constant. And then when we sit and meditate, we kind of expect the mind to just be stable and, of course, stay. Well, surprise, you've been training your mind the whole day for multitasking, going from this to that, what's next? I wonder whether they answered my email, my text, what's happening on Facebook, did anybody like what I posted? You know, there's just like the mind is going and going, and then when you sit, if you're expecting the mind to just settle, it's not going to do that. So the process of calming, of bringing stability to the mind, actually has a lot of healing effect, has a lot of just physically healing. You can feel very physically healing when the mind is stable and the mind is not running around everywhere. And the mind, for example, is just sitting and breathing and enjoying breathing. It's just simple, very simple, very simple. Also, when the mind is calm and stable, we can have a lot of insight into our psychological process on a daily basis. When the mind is stable, we're not as much tossed around with whatever thought or upset or latest grievance or whatever emotion is happening. There can be some stability to actually look at it with some sense of objectivity, to step out of it, because there is that calm, there is that holding, there is that sense of safety to allow to do that. I know that for me, this practice is really, really soothing, especially when my mind is really distracted or upset, and I just decide to just let go. Just let go of the thoughts, and just for a moment. I know the thoughts, the concern, whatever project or topic is of concern, I know it's still going to be there in 5 minutes. What if I just let it go and just breathe and just enjoy breathing and just be with the breath? And after that 5 minutes, which usually becomes longer because it's so pleasant that I just want to stabilize a little more, then whatever it was, there was a better perspective. There's more... there's an insight that comes about that process. And don't take my word for it. Experience it for yourself. Explore it for yourself. I mean, there is this concept of borrowed faith. So I can tell you this works, And if you've not experienced it, you can borrow faith from me. And then it becomes a verified faith when you actually experience it yourself, when you do take, in the midst of your mind going everywhere, in the midst of being upset or whatever it is emotionally going on, just choosing to let go for a moment, just choosing to let go of the storyline, just let go, we'll still be there. And having the attitude of renunciation in the mind, letting go, to build that foothold for yourself to be able to have more insight. So I want to spend a few minutes talking about the attitude or the supporting structure, no matter what the practice is, whatever the object is, whether the object is the breath or loving kindness or a colored disc or whatever the object is, there are attitudes that are really important for developing this practice, which actually are important in Vipassana also, but especially in this practice. So what happens a lot of times with people is that they feel like they have to concentrate their mind with Herculean effort. They have to bring the mind together. They have to concentrate it. It can't go anywhere. The practice becomes really tight. The body becomes really tight. The mind becomes tight. The body becoming tight is the body becomes really painful. And at the beginning of my practice, I remember I used to get headaches when I was trying to practice concentration samadhi, samatha practice. And I realized I was tightening my forehead as if I had to concentrate, as if the concentration had to be done right around my forehead. And I would get this big, huge headaches. Anyone experience that? Anything like that, practicing concentration? Yeah, just the body can get so tight when you're working so hard. And the way to actually calm the mind, unify the mind, have samadhi, is the opposite of that. Is actually to completely relax the mind, and relax the body as much as possible. Relax the body as much as possible. The spine should still be straight, but with that straight spine, let the body just kind of droop, be as soft as possible. Because when the body is soft, then the mind relaxes, becomes softer. One image I like to offer people is, imagine you're sitting in a warm bath. Another aspect that's really important is developing enjoyment and joy. The practice of samadhi is joyous. It's supposed to be joyous. When we say concentration, again, it's like hard work. Whereas, again, that's why I think that's not a great word, especially for me, but because samadhi is pure joy. I love this little booklet by Ajahn Sucitto. The title of it is Samadhi is Pure Enjoyment. And there's this beautiful quote at in the back of it. It says, samadhi is the careful collecting of oneself into the joy of the present moment. Isn't that lovely? Samadhi is the careful collecting of oneself into the joy of the present moment. So when you think of samadhi, think of joy, think of ease, think of pleasure. Because actually states of joy and pleasure both lead to samadhi and arise out of samadhi. When the mind gets calm and unified, joy comes up on its own. Sense of pleasure just bubbles up on its own. Pleasure that will arise and pass away, but nevertheless it's there. So sense of joy and contentment, happiness, leads to the mind being unified. And then the mind being unified leads to more contentment, happiness, and joy. It's not a vicious cycle. It's a happy cycle. They lead to one another. Virtuous cycle. That's it. Virtuous. Thank you. Virtuous cycle. another attitude to cultivate is one of seclusion of the mind when one practices samadhi, is to choose for the mind right now to be secluded. It's the way I was describing. I know the thoughts are going to be there still, the issues are going to be there, but right now, for this however many minutes, seclusion. I'm going to choose seclusion of the mind. I'm going to choose renunciation. I'm going to renounce all those thoughts and juicy plans and memories and images that come and give the mind a lot of pleasure. Right now, I'm going to renounce all of those and just be with the breath. It's a practice of renunciation also. Balanced effort is so important in this practice, a non-striving balanced effort. So there has to be some effort, but the effort is not huge every time the mind goes away and you bring it back. It's not hard effort, it's gentle effort, but it's over and over and over again. The word in Pali is atapi, gentle yet persistent effort. See how that sits for you? Gentle yet persistent effort. So you might have to apply the effort 1,000 times, especially at first when you're sitting and collecting the mind. The mind will wander, you bring it back, the mind will wander, you bring it back, you bring it back, you bring it back. But every time you bring it back, it's as gently as my hand is moving, as softly and gently. It's not, oh, come back, mind. Oh, come back. It's not that. Every time it's gentle, it's very gentle, very loving. As loving as light as it can possibly be. The getting it attitude does not work. The getting it, that striving attitude doesn't work. In fact, whenever you practice samadhi or any practice actually, ask yourself, what is the mind that's practicing? Is the same mind that's my work mind that's trying to get something, trying to accomplish something, trying to get accolades, trying to get another attainment, trying to get, do, be. Is it that mind that is now applying itself to this practice? Or is it a mind of surrender? Because that is the attitude that's needed for this practice. Surrender, being with, breathing with, just allowing the practice to do you instead of you doing the practice. Again, I like Ajahn Suchito saying that you have to think of samadhi as enjoyable. If it's not enjoyable, it's too much effort, and it's wrong effort. And the hard work can pay off in short term. You can get concentrated in short term if you're working hard, but it will all fall apart. One last thing I'd like to say is, one thing that I really appreciated about developing this practice is one learns so much from developing the practice. That is, every time you try to unify the mind and collect the mind and you bring the mind back gently, you surrender, you do all of these things, and still it all falls apart. And you have to have patience, and you learn from the patterns of your mind what happens. Through that, a lot of learning is happening. Through trying to unify the mind, it all falling apart and starting over again. You learn so much about your mind from that practice. So if I could hand each of you a unified mind right now, it wouldn't serve you. The process you actually go through in order to build that is part of the lesson, is part of the learning, is part of this teaching that you learn about your mind, your patterns, how this mind works. So these were some reflections about the practice of samatha leading to the state of samadhi. I hope they've been of some use. And let's just close our eyes and dedicate the merit of our practice together. May the merit of our practice together this morning, both in sitting, in listening, in reflecting, being in community, may it be a cause and condition for joy, liberation, and freedom of all beings, including ourselves. Thank you for your kind attention.